Well, Nick, a weird series for us to put a bow on. Every single game in this four-game set, a blowout one way or another. Actually, the closest game ended up being yesterday's game, which was still a 9-3 victory for the Blue Jays. But the Jays get a pair of blowouts. The Yankees get their second of two blowouts today to wrap up a series split, which was an 8-1 loss for the Jays. I suppose a series split is not the worst result when it comes, really against anyone, but against one of the best teams in baseball by record. But I don't know, when you have Kevin Gausman on the mound, you have a 2-1 series lead, I feel like, I'm curious to get your take on this. For me, the expectations, I think, are slightly higher and are therefore tougher to stomach when the result is what you get today. Like, it's not only a loss, which was like a relatively highly uncompetitive game for the vast majority of it.
Yeah, and it's also where they are competitively, right? Like, this is a team that desperately needs an extended stretch of maybe not a pure win streak, but whether it's, you know, a 9 of 11 or a 10 of 13, something like that, to get back into the mix, to recalibrate where they might be at the trade deadline, things of that nature. Like, in a vacuum, the idea of splitting a series with the New York Yankees is not a problem. But in terms of where this team is at right now today, it's just not putting them in the right direction.
That's Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590. Name and location, the People's Text Line is always open. Kevin Gausman, I think, for me, Nick, is the biggest story of the day. 4 1/3 innings pitched, 7 hits, 7 runs, all of them were earned, 5 walks, which is particularly striking, 7 strikeouts, yes, he threw 107 pitches over those 4 1/3 innings pitched, 67 of which were strikes. And now, entering play today, and this is something we kind of talked around, I suppose, in the pregame show, but opponents had a .304 batting average off the four-seamer, and the Yankees were really looking for it today. I mean, he generally speaking, it seemed like he just had poor command of all of his pitches for the most part. Like, actually, you and I talked about this earlier on the pregame show, but the velo was something I was concerned about. Velo actually wasn't a huge issue today. Like, I don't think it was actually a problem whatsoever, was how hard he was throwing the ball, but he had a real problem commanding, I would say, like the slider, the four-seamer, the splitter. I guess the splitter of all pitches looked okay at best, but that four-seam fastball, he had a real problem finding, like, really any part of the zone with it, it seemed.
Yeah, the fastball command was not there, and that was more of an issue because he couldn't get guys to chase the splitter today. He threw 38 splitters. He only got 12 swings on that pitch. Like, you need, based on the pitch mix that he's got, you need people to be swinging at the splitter outside the zone, be worried about that pitch, and then maybe you can lock them up on a few fastballs, have them chasing high, things like that. And the interplay between the two pitches did not work because he couldn't get them to chase on the splitter, and then he couldn't command the fastball. We rarely see him walk that many guys. Yeah. It was his worst start of the season from an earned runs allowed perspective. Nothing went right for him today. At kind of the most basic level, it is kind of relatively simple the way he pitches. He's not purely a two-pitch pitcher, but effectively that's where most of his stuff is. And when neither of those two pitches is effective, it's going to be very, very difficult for him to have a good day.
Yeah, like, to your point, he threw 107 pitches. He threw 4 different kinds of pitches. He threw the sinker and the slider next to the fastball and splitter. But, I mean, of those 107 pitches, he threw 63 of them were four-seam fastballs, and 38 of them were splitters. Like, so, yes, he did throw the sinker and slider. He threw 2 sliders, and he threw 4 sinkers, and everything else was the fastball and the splitter. And I'm pretty sure on one of those 2 sliders he threw was, I think it might have been the one of the hits given up to DJ LeMahieu of all people, right? Like, I don't know. If you're giving up ringing extra base hits to DJ LeMahieu in the year of our Lord 2024, it's not a great look. It's not my favorite look for Kevin Gausman.
No, and yeah, you talk about those other pitches he shows, and that could be a criticism, right? He's too predictable. Why is he only using these pitches? Like, there's a reason why. And it, you know, it's not like the other ones are unusual by any stretch of the imagination, but he is good at what he's good at, and he pitches to his strength. And generally speaking, he's, you know, you could argue over the last 2 years prior to 2024, he was the best player on the Blue Jays. What he does often works. Today, it really didn't at any level. And when he's not inducing those swings outside the zone, it's just not going to work for him. Like, that is what his success is predicated on. He's got to get guys swinging at those pitches below the zone if it's a splitter, or above the zone if it's the fastball. Yeah. If that's not happening, then he can really get hit around.
Yeah, he seemed to, like, very briefly corral the fastball in the third. Like, again, for a very brief moment, like, he finds Danny Jansen's glove on the outside edge. I think it was Austin Wells at the plate, who is a lefty. He gets Wells for the strikeout. But again, just way too many uncompetitive pitches for a veteran team like the Yankees to take. Too many walks, certainly. I can't decide. I'm curious where you are on this, Nick, because I can't decide personally if Gausman's 2024 season is just one where, like, a guy didn't get off to the right start, to the start he's used to. There were injury concerns, like the shoulder, and he started spring training super late, like literally started the last day of spring training for his first outing of the whole season, and then, you know, kind of had the first couple starts of the year as an extended spring training. Like, I just can't decide if it's just a tough start to the year, dealing with something all year, never really gets right, and it's not going to be until next year we see him bounce back, or if this is, like, legitimately something to be concerned about moving forward as to, like, what Gausman is, as, you know, vis-a-vis is he an ace or something like that on a start-by-start basis, which would be tough, right? Because I think we as the media and the fans and everyone who listens and watches, I think are very used to watching and listening to Kevin Gausman not just be, like, good, but be dominant, right? And I feel like there haven't been a lot of starts. Certainly we got the complete game shutout from him a couple weeks ago, but, I mean, beyond that, I'm not saying it's been a lot like this, but it's been a very, very inconsistent type of year from him, and I'm wondering, like, at what point do you get to the area where you think to yourself, boy, this is, like, we're in some trouble here, perhaps?
It's interesting because he's one of the few players that the Blue Jays have signed for multiple years beyond the season.
Right.
Like, a lot of the players they're either unrestricted free agents after this year or after next year. You know, that's kind of famously Vlad and Bo are in that boat. You've got a couple more years of Gausman, so you really want to ensure that he can get back to being that guy. And you talked about he had that, you know, the rough spring training in terms of his health, and he never seemed to get on track. I'm really interested to see what happens after the All-Star break, because there's so little time in a baseball season to have a moment, regather yourself, whether that's physically or mentally. It's just such a grind. It's absolutely relentless. And so maybe having a little bit of a break could give him a chance to reset. I'm not really willing to give up on the idea that he's a top of the rotation starter, you know, for the rest of his contract with the Blue Jays or his career. Like, that chapter is over. It might be, you know, possibly this is the beginning of the end. I think it's too soon to say that. I'm interested to see what he does after the All-Star break. But it's possible that 2024 is just a little bit of a lost season by his standards.
And yeah, so I don't think it's necessarily like the talent is no longer there. Like, you still see the glimmers of it. And I mean, we've had this conversation about many pitchers over the years, Blue Jays or otherwise, but even if you wanted to only narrow the focus to the Blue Jays, I mean, Berríos was like that, Kikuchi was like that, and they both turned it around. And I know it's on a person-by-person basis, but I don't know, I just refuse to believe it just vanishes, just like, boom, it's gone, right? And I think with Gausman, like, even if we had not gotten the complete game shutout a couple weeks ago, I still think I would believe it's like, largely there. But the walks, I think, beyond anything else, like, certainly the command and getting hit around and seven earned runs and so on, but the five walks was startling, because I just feel like you almost never see that from someone like Gausman.
Well, even in this season, and we're considering this to be sort of an off year for Gausman, coming into today's game, he'd never walked more than three guys in an outing, right? Like, you're normally going to see on his scorecard at the end of the day, it's two walks, it's one walk. Yeah. It's not uncommon for him to not walk anyone at all. That has not been the issue for him. He's only walked about two batters per nine innings coming into this game. Like, there have been issues with Gausman. It's been the hard contact. It's been less strikeouts relative to what we've seen earlier in his Blue Jays tenure. Him not being able to find the plate has not been an issue this year. He's been one of the better pitchers in the league, in fact, at that. So when you see him take something that has been a fundamental strength and turn into a weakness, even in one outing, it's a little bit concerning. But when I think about, you know, what's Gausman going to do in the next start, what's he going to do in the next couple of weeks, I'm not panicking and thinking, oh, he's totally lost the handle, he can't control the ball anymore. Because although he's had issues this year, that really hasn't been one of them, generally speaking.
That's Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Those are the numbers for you to call. Very quickly, before we get to Russ in New Jersey, we'll go to Russ in 2 seconds here. But before we get to Russ, an update on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. from John Schneider. Of course, we saw earlier Vladdy getting hit by the pitch on his right hand as he gripped the bat on the fingers of that right hand that were wrapped around the knob of the bat. So no protection on that hand because he has the guard, I guess, on his left hand, but just the batting glove on the right hand. So he gets hit right on the fingers, and his hand, I mean, it seemed to shake a bit because he was probably experiencing a lot of discomfort. And I don't know if you've ever broken any bones, Nick. I actually broke a number of the fingers on my right hand when I was in university, and it is extremely painful. Let me tell you.
So I don't mean to brag in front of thousands of people on the radio, but I've never broken a bone. Okay. As far as I know, I'm invulnerable.
Oh, right. Well, let's hope we don't test that anytime soon. But update from John Schneider is that he had an X-ray. Nothing is broken. Nothing is fractured. And when he was removed late in this ball game, when David Schneider pinch hit for him, it was just precautionary and had to do with the fact that this game was a blowout. So that's good. That's good news, I would say.
Not a lot of excellent news for the Blue Jays in today's game, but that certainly qualifies.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. Russ in New Jersey. Russ, thanks for waiting, man. What's up?
Okay, so first of all, about Gausman, I think the biggest thing about Gausman this year is, you know, I think he's the biggest difference between strikeouts of any pitcher in baseball this year from last year to this year. I know he had 7 today, but his strikeouts are way, way down. I think maybe because of his velocity on the fastball, so he's not getting guys to chase the splitter, but he's not striking out nearly he had the biggest differential from last year. Secondly, on this team, you know, I've been calling up since the second week of the season. I've been a Blue Jay fan since 77, okay? I went with all Kay, Roy Howell, and all those guys. I don't hope they win because I want this organization to finally stop saying, oh, we're only 5 games out, 6 games out, but we have a chance and this and that. We have no chance. We haven't won more than 4 games in a row this season, okay? You still have – what do you still have? 8 with Baltimore, 7 with Baltimore, okay? You have 7 with Baltimore. You still have the Yankees for another 3. You still have Boston. This team has shown no ability to go on that win streak. And let me give you the math. Let me tell you, let's say I could tell you the Blue Jays go on a run and they make the playoffs. Unbelievable, which never going to happen. And they win a round. They win a round. They haven't won a game in the playoffs since 16, but they win a round. Then they lose. You're still in the same position with Guerrero and Bichette. We're not here to win rounds or to win playoff games. You're here to win a World Series. And I know it's a crapshoot once you get in and things could go wrong. But the bottom line is this team has issues. And this organization at the top has to stop lying to people and saying, oh, we're still in it. You know, we're still calling for the 24th season. The season's over. Okay, the season's over. There's too many teams in front of you. You don't have. You've shown zero capability to go on a winning streak, and it's over. And you have to figure out who is going to run this team, and if Ross Atkins is going to run this team, it hasn't shown much that you know the trades that he's made haven't really come to help this team. But they got to make a decision of where this team is going. So you come in July and you're 10 games behind the wild card. Hopefully they'll figure out they have to stop, you know, with the baloney, and they have to make the deals and redo this team. That's my comment for today.
Hey, Russ, thanks for the call. Russ, Nick with a perhaps realistic if grim assessment of the season, but he's not wrong. I actually don't think he's wrong. You know, I actually don't think I've ever brought this point up with you, and something Russ talked about like hoping they should lose more because losing would necessitate some kind of change, but I said this to Jesse, and I think I said this to Danielli as well, so I'm curious to get your take on this, but I actually do wonder if the best thing for the team, just in a general sense, is to lose, right? And I'm certainly by no means advocating for like a bad situation because, frankly, doing these shows when the team wins is way more fun than doing it when they lose. But at the same time, if you do want change, because I think a big part of the discussion is to change, you know, you can trade Kikuchi, you can trade Jano, you can trade Garcia, you can trade Kiermaier, or Turner, or whatever. Like, those are all options. But, I don't know, like, I mean, if Ross Atkins is the one still pulling the trigger or pressing the buttons, pulling the strings, you know, I think a lot of fans would be relatively unhappy, right? So And I feel like the only way you will get your wish as Jays fans for that not to be the case, for him to be the one, you know, making the calls, then ultimately I feel like what has to happen is for them to go on a massive losing streak, because of something we talked about before is the mere existence of the third wild card, to Russ's point, I think almost like tricks teams into thinking they could like just squeak in there. And again, I'm not sure, like, it's great for revenue and eyeballs and casual viewers and so on, but for like actual sustained success, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I think it depends on your relationship with the product, right? Like, if you are, as you said, something who's a more casual fan and you want to turn on the TV once in a while, or you want to listen to the radio once in a while, and you want a product that's going to entertain you, you generally want to see the team win. In terms of the cold hard calculus between what gets this team closer to winning a World Series, I think there's truth to it. Because if they did go on a big run and then they cost themselves the opportunity to turn these expiring contracts into potentially future assets and prospects that could be useful to the team down the line, that's probably not an opportunity you want to miss, because the chances are that even if they go on that run, it's hard to envision them making the playoffs, doing anything in the playoffs. So it is a bit of a cynical way to think about the team. But it's understandable that that's where fans are at, because there probably is more value in what you can do when you have a clear direction retooling the team than living in that ambiguity and hoping for an outcome that realistically is unlikely to come to pass, which would be successfully making the playoffs and doing anything there in 2024.
When it comes to trading away assets, I'm not sure if anyone, I know I brought this up to you earlier, but just for anyone who hadn't seen it, so Bob Nightingale, who writes for USA Today, had a variety of nuggets in his weekly column. He talks about how like the White Sox made some overtures towards re-signing Garrett Crochet. They weren't particularly close. That the Dodgers have reportedly made an offer towards acquiring Garrett Crochet, which, frankly, no one wants to see that after the offseason the Dodgers had. But he did go on to say that that offer was quickly rejected. But kind of buried in there in his kind of column of notes was that the Blue Jays are basically planning to put all the UFAs on the trade block. And they're the guys I mentioned earlier, Jimmy Garcia, Yusei Kikuchi, Danny Jansen, Kevin Kiermaier, and Justin Turner. And I've kind of been on the mindset, Nick, that those five players probably are not going to fetch you a lot, only because they're not going to fetch you the best prospects or even a top five prospect probably from another team, just because they're all UFAs, right? Like, you usually guys with control are the guys who fetch you a little bit more value. Kikuchi probably fetch you the most. I know he's gotten beaten up a teensy bit, having a little less great the last couple of weeks than he did to the beginning of the season, but I think he's probably the guy as a starting pitcher who you can rely to fetch you the most value if that's what you believe should happen. But I did want to bring up Justin Turner, because mainly because he had the only run of the ball game today for the Blue Jays, the RBI single in the bottom of the third inning. Here's something wild. Before the game today, here are Turner's splits by month so far this season, since we have now wrapped up the month of June. My pal Rob Wong putting this out for us all on the old Twitter machine. Okay, so splits by month so far this season by WRC Plus. In April, he had a WRC Plus of 151. In May, he had a WRC Plus of 8. Just a single digit, 8. That's how, frankly, bad he was playing. And entering play today, and this is a game in which, again, he had an RBI single, had a couple of really deep flyouts as well. But today, entering play, he had a WRC Plus of 173. That is incredible. Like, maybe it was just a slump, but it's just kind of just funny, because it just feels like that's the kind of pattern I think people hope they would have seen from, maybe not like to that extent in terms of the valley, when those peaks and valleys of May with the WRC Plus of 8. But I bring up the numbers because I think that does illustrate that he's kind of turned it around. And I do kind of wonder if he would have some kind of value at the deadline to some kind of contender.
I think that he has some of that value that is intangible, where people perceive him as someone who has been there, done that, seen it all in the playoffs, maybe a steadying presence. As a hitter, he doesn't have defensive value, and he's sort of slightly above average when you take all the numbers together. Those monthly splits are interesting, but one thing I will say about that is that at the beginning of the year, he was driving the ball a lot more. Like, he has one home run in June. Mm-hmm. He's got a total of 6 extra base hits, whereas in that April, he had 12 extra base hits and 4 home runs. And he was looking more like someone who could produce in the middle of the lineup. It's been a lot of spraying of singles. It's been a lot of walks. That's valuable. I'm not trying to be dismissive of that, but there's normally a little bit more luck involved in that, and balls going through the infield and falling in and stuff of that nature. I don't think that he's really going to be considered as someone who's a, you know, a middle of the lineup for
sure,
us,
yeah,
a top
yeah.
5 hitter in a good batting order, but he's someone who you can use against lefties, and again has that veteran presence, however much teams want to value that. So if he keeps going fairly well, I do see a market developing for him.
I'm not going to draw the comparison one-to-one to like a guy like Carlos Santana, mainly because Carlos Santana, when the Mariners acquired Santana, he was still like hitting like absolute dingers, right? Like he was still producing a lot of runs, whether it was home run or just driving in runs with extra base hits. So it's not a perfect comparison, but I do remember when the Mariners made that trade a couple of years ago. I do recall having the conversation with a variety of people, like whether it was Blair and Barker or a guest on the station, guested on the network, just simply about the value of veteran presence. And I think, and again, like whether or not like fans value that, or I'm sure not even all teams actually value that, right? But I was told that a lot of contending teams do still place like a pretty large emphasis on getting veteran presence, especially for the playoffs, where kind of as Russ alluded to, it's kind of all of a crapshoot. Again, does that mean like he's going to suddenly fetch you like some top prospect? Probably not, right? But I do wonder if that influences the decision for teams to go out and get a Kevin Kiermaier, similar another vet who made another phenomenal play today. I know that kind of is going to get lost in an 8-1 defeat. Maybe to a certain extent it should, but boy, I mean like those kinds of guys are quite useful.
Yeah, I mean, Chad Green owes Kevin Kiermaier a steak dinner. That was a fantastic catch. I think the value in the whole veteran side of the equation is really context dependent, right? If you have a team, say the Los Angeles Dodgers, who's already packed with guys who have had these experiences and have been through the battles already, maybe you don't need to bring back Turner, for instance. But say you're a team like the Baltimore Orioles, that's a young and upcoming team, and you do think, oh, we are a little bit inexperienced here. We're a little bit green. Some of these guys might get a little bit tense in these big moments. They haven't seen a lot of it yet. Perhaps there's a little bit more value there. As a general manager, you have to have a feel for your group and kind of decide, is this an attribute that is going to have particular value to my group, or is this something that we're kind of good on this already and we can leave it aside? But I do agree with you in that there are definitely front offices around baseball that see the things that Turner brings off the field and think there's value in that.
Real quick, just before we go to Gary in Vancouver, we'll get Gary on here in a sec, but I wanted to get your take on this. I saw the Kiermaier robbery of Verdugo today and totally agree. Chad Green needs to be given Kiermaier something. I don't know what, but he owes him something there. But I thought to myself, maybe this is because I've been thinking about the All-Star game more as it approaches in like less than a month here, less than only a couple of weeks, really. But it would be kind of cool to see something like some kind of skills competition at the All-Star game, like something where you could do, like, I'm not really sure how you would even do it, but I know like the NBA has like the what is it, like the dribble pass shoot event at the All-Star game? Like, I know like they're fundamentally different sports, but it just like next to the home run derby, it'd be kind of cool where it's like measuring some inventiveness around measuring fastest sprint speed, or like watching Kiermaier and Varsho out there, like how much ground you can cover on a fly ball in the outfield. Like, I know that sounds really boring in concept, but maybe it's just because like I've always felt I've never been a huge All-Star guy and I always felt like it could use an extra bit of like oomph, but I don't know. I just spitballing. I thought it'd be kind of fun to invent something like extra, I suppose. Having said that, the MLB All-Star game is probably like the best All-Star game simply because of the home run derby, because I don't know, as much of a fan I was when I was younger of like the dunk contest in the NBA, even that's kind of, you know, lost some luster a little bit.
Yeah, the NBA All-Star game is absolutely ugly. Yeah, baseball is a sport. It's hard in terms of how it might lean itself to skills competitions because it's so variable on a day-to-day basis, like where exactly balls go. There no hitters are good enough to hit it to the exact same spot in the outfield at the exact same speed. But with a machine, you might be able to do something like that. That other baseball leagues around the world have dabbled in this a little bit, like the Korean League. I think they have some accuracy hitting things.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We're trying to put it to certain spots around the infield and outfield, which is not really realistic to what baseball is like, but it's kind of fun as well. I'm open to any kind of experimentation because the All-Star game and the All-Star break should be a lot of fun, and I feel like a lot of people just sort of tune out at this point.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590, on your cell. Gary in Vancouver. Gary, what's up? What's going on the West Coast?
Not much. We got the weather's okay, but I was watching the Blue Jays attempt to beat Gerrit Cole. I don't like Gerrit Cole, but he could pitch. By the way, I wanted to thank your producer. He's a real cool cat. I like him.
He is. I agree.
What I was going to say is this. When you have a – there's only two guys right now on the Yankees that can hurt you. That is Soto and Judge. And Schneider decided to pitch to Judge in the first inning. I didn't even see it, unfortunately, but he got a home run. Wrong. Then the next time he gets up, and I think it was the game before that, and he gets a single. Wrong. If you're a Tani, or if you're a Judge, or a Soto, and as I told your producer, any of these players can hurt you, and you have a base open, give them four. Put up four fingers, and walk them. I don't care if you have to load the bases. Walk them and take your chances on the rest of that team. And he didn't do that. And in my opinion, I'm not like Russ. I could be, but I'm not going to go there. Schneider should be gone. I'm sorry. He's a nice guy, but we don't want nice guys. We want a team that can do something. And when you let Judge hit, no way. You know, sorry, but have a good life. Go manage somebody else, but not the Blue Jays. And by the way, thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Thanks for calling in, man. What do you think? Intentionally walk Judge every time, basically. And it's funny. I mean, that's a conversation we definitely had when Shohei and the Angels were here last year. Certainly it was a conversation we had when the Dodgers were here as well, but with Shohei in tow. But I could kind of see it as the game goes on, if Judge continues to punish you, but I don't know. Like, I'm not sure anyone expected Gosman to give up, like, a meatball of a pitch to Judge in the first inning. You know what I mean? I think that's where I would draw the line. I'm not sure if you're intentionally mocking Judge, like, in the top of the first inning, necessarily.
Yeah, there's no one in baseball who is at that Barry Bonds in the early 2000s level right now. And I think that there's a little bit of a misunderstanding about how often intentional walks actually happen, right? If you look today, Bryce Harper has been intentionally walked 8 times. That leads the league. Like, it's a relatively rare play because the reality is that the average outcome is an out. Even the very best hitters get out the majority of the time. And so intentionally walking guys really only makes sense in a select sliver of situations, especially when, you know, you talk about Otani with the Angels. That's a good example because the rest of the lineup around him, especially when Mike Trout would be injured, was truly putrid. So that's a little bit different. You know, John Schneider this year has issued 11 intentional walks, and that's actually 44% a higher rate than the average manager. Wow. So the Blue Jays do it more than most teams, and they still don't do it a ton because the idea of giving up on getting an out and just putting a guy on base, the vast majority of the time, the math just doesn't work on it.
Do I understand doing it if, like, a guy's coming up to the plate for, like, the third or fourth time and he's gotten on base with, like, super hard hit contact every single one of those times? Yeah, I kind of understand that. But, like, when the game starts, I mean, it was earlier in this series. I think it was in the first game of the series where Judge went hitless and was, like, 0 for 3 or 0 for 4 or whatever it is. Like, he is absolutely going to win AL MVP this year. Like, unless something really, unless really, like, Soto heats up, he's probably going to win AL MVP, which, again, is, like, shouldn't be that surprising because last year he was, even in, like, in an injury-shortened season, he still hit the cover off the baseball, right?
He's a superhero, but he's not a god.
He's
not
immortal.
He's like Batman. Yeah. He doesn't have superpowers. He's you can still get him out.
Last I checked, he is leading the American League, and I believe batting average, home runs, and RBI. But, I mean, we are also a couple weeks away from the All-Star break, so we'll revisit that conversation when we are closer to the Triple Crown conversation. Let's take a quick break here, Nick. And when we come back, go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. Haven't read any text yet. And we'll go back to the phones as well, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Blue Jays lose 8-1, but it is a series split for the Blue Jays and Yankees after four games here at the Rogers Center. You're listening to Jays Talk Show and Nick with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I mean, there's still a whole lot of good, obviously. You know, I think looking back to the start of it, you know, kind of a weird ramp up, you know, with a short spring. I think you're seeing less strikeouts, you know, and he can really rack those up. Split has been kind of hit or miss, you know, kind of not caring what he has in the past. But, you know, I think that's been the biggest thing. You know, a few more walks and then the split isn't carrying as consistently as it usually does. Which is his best pitch. So again, I think today just a tick off the zone, which led to a little bit of trouble.
That is John Schneider describing the start for Kevin Gausman today. 4 1/3 innings pitched, 7 hits, 7 earned runs, 5 walks, 7 strikeouts, 107 pitches for Gausman in an 8-1 Blue Jays loss. It's a series split for the Jays and the Yankees. The Astros come to town for the first of four tomorrow, which, of course, is Canada Day. And, of course, happy Canada Day long weekend to everyone out there. At least it was an early game, so people can still enjoy the rest of their Canada Day long weekend. But we're here on Jays Talk Show and Nick with you until the bottom of the hour. And I wanted to read a couple of texts to you. There's one from Jake in Ottawa. Again, 590-590, I should say, is the where you can text us. That's the people's text line. I see a text from Jake in Ottawa in the nation's capital. He says, Gausman definitely didn't have a great day. All pitchers have bad days. How do you win only getting one run? Can't expect the pitching staff to give up 0 runs most games. This is true. Like, he's not wrong. But I think the reason I'm more surprised is because, A, Gausman is in theory your ace, even if he has not had an ace-like season this season, Nick. But also, I almost feel like the offense has, I'm curious where you're at on this right now, because I almost feel like the offense has somewhat like earned themselves a bit of a reprieve. Like, if we were still doing the same thing we'd been doing and experiencing for much of the season, I think I'd be like, yeah, you know what, Jake's right. Like, Jake's absolutely right, because I've said this a million times, but you can't expect the pitching staff, whether it's the rotation or the bullpen, to walk this tightrope all the time. Most of the time, the starters give you a chance to win. Unfortunately, Gausman was not on his game, and he didn't give them a chance to win today.
If you forget what Gausman did completely and just focus on the offense, they didn't have an extra base hit today. It's almost impossible to win a baseball game when you don't have a single extra base hit. So that criticism is valid, and they weren't facing prime Gerrit Cole. Like, he's still working his way back. Now, he looked better today than he did in his previous outings, but he's still working his way back. So there were some opportunities, and they didn't make things happen. But you're right that there's a broader context, and the context is that they've been hitting pretty well over the last week or so, and they came to this game, the offense had consistently been good, and part of that is Vladdy. He's just been unbelievable in recent games, and kind of basically for the month of June as the power's come back. And then you have, you know, Spencer Horwitz doesn't play against lefties necessarily, but he's been a top-of-the-lineup factor as well. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has been hot.
Yep.
So the whole picture, again, is this a lineup I'd bet on going forward to be one of the better groups in baseball? Absolutely not. But it has shown some life. So when it has a lifeless day like it did today, there's really no other way to describe it, with 4 hits and 1 run and no extra base hits, it's easier to say, okay, that was one bad day, than say, oh, yet again, they have failed to do anything.
I think that's why I'm willing to at least temporarily overlook it, if only because, like, again, if we were on, like, if they hadn't scored, like, 5+ runs in all these games in the past week or so, I think I'd be like, yeah, you know what, like, Gausman had a bad day, but, like, the offense, again, didn't show up. But it's just in the last couple of weeks, we have seen more life from the offense, which, at least for me, I'm willing to give them a bit of a break. Although, again, I think both things can be true today. Gausman was not great, and the offense was not particularly great either. I see here, Stephen Kitchener, I really want to know how long Jays management is going to keep focusing on analytics and ignoring what's happening in front of them. You know what, Steve? I would like you to clarify, because I almost feel like I said this a couple times, Nick, because and while I do think there is such a thing as maybe like too much information, I largely believe that analytics have helped most teams. And I know we like to joke about the khakis and the spreadsheets and like how you could just print off a spreadsheet and have you manage the team that way. And if that's the case, then like you or I can manage the team, right? But I do think that I sometimes wonder if analytics, because not all, and I think it was Mike in Victoria who texted this in a couple weeks ago, but when I was doing Jay's talk, but I kind of talked about how not all, much like teams, not all analytic departments are created equal either, right? I mean, because if that was the case, then every team would do like what the Rays and Dodgers do, right? If they would all be as successful as finding the diamonds in the rough and, you know, sprinkling the pixie dust on guys who will immediately become successful, like they would all be able to do that, right? But and I think the Rays and Dodgers are some of my favorite examples, because the Rays operate with like one of the smallest payrolls in baseball, and the Dodgers operate with like arguably the biggest payroll in baseball. So and they both find success in different ways, and I think that's why with me the usage of analytics for the Blue Jays specifically sometimes frustrates me, because sometimes it feels like it's almost being like used incorrectly or misapplied. For example, like we're not seeing it right now, but when Springer was batting cleanup, or when they refused to take him out of the leadoff spot and he was really, really struggling, like there's no way you can sell me that analytics is telling you to keep him in the leadoff spot, like, or keep him in batting cleanup or in batting in significant positions. I think that's kind of where I fall on it. Like, it is important, but sometimes I wonder if it's used incorrectly.
There are significant misunderstandings with this whole discourse, I believe, because whenever you're criticizing something, you got to think about what is the alternative. And if you look around baseball, every front office is using analytics extensively. As you say, different departments are built differently, both in terms of the resources put behind it and the effectiveness, like the Rays or the Dodgers. But the idea that you're going to kick out analytics from building a team is silly, because it's a tool in the toolbox. Everybody is using it. I also don't think that the Blue Jays have a massive emphasis on analytics compared to other teams. What I believe is at the core of this idea is the way that the Blue Jays front office communicates, the way that Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro communicates, is often not very relatable to the average fan. And they do speak in these generalities, and they do speak in ways that hint at the use of analytics. Right. I think it's very easy to paint them with a brush, saying, oh, these guys are only interested in spreadsheets and numbers. And maybe the khakis are playing into that. I think, you know, khakis are catching strays from the Blue Jays fan base. You know, there's probably a time and place for them as a clothing item, but they've been poisoned now in the discourse. But there are other front offices that have the same amount of analytics as a Blue Jays and respect it the same amount, but they communicate in a way that indicates they're more feel type of people. And so I think this is really, it's probably more of a PR problem than a organizational philosophy problem.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. One I've never really considered before, because I think we do all just, all to the texter's point, Steve, that we all kind of assume that they do rely super heavily on analytics. And I think it's not helped when, like, you know, recently Schneider was saying something along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he was saying something along the lines of, like, oh, well, we get to see things with data about Springer that, like, the fans don't get to see and the media don't get to see, which, like, I think is, like, just seems that seems fine. Like, that seems pretty normal that the team has all these bazillion data points that the average person or media member won't have access to. I think that's fair. But I do think it's, like, that combined with the relative opacity of the Blue Jays front office that doesn't really help when you, like, are trying to question, like, the decision-making process. Because you're right, it does, just the way it's like, you know, kind of word salad-y, corporate speak, like, lawyer, politician way of communication, which I shouldn't necessarily knock, because I'm married to a lawyer, but she does not like when I do that. But my point being that those professions communicate in those ways, like, on purpose, because you kind of need to obfuscate things a little bit, whereas, like, you don't really, like, need to do that if you're a general manager of a sports team.
Yeah, and that example with John Schneider is interesting, right? Because it would be very easy for a manager, and other managers around baseball might say to you something to the effect of, I really believe in George Springer. I see the work he's putting in every day. I think he's getting closer. He's got an amazing track record. This guy's been a star in our league. The talent is there. You could say something as basic as that, and And you could have analytical reasons for believing that, but you don't actually have to bring them into what you're saying. And when you bring it into what you're saying and you put it out in the public square, you create this image of a team that is a little bit robotic, that is a little bit over-reliant on analytics, when the reality is that every team uses them extensively.
Text line question from Noah in Fergus. Noah wants to know, you know, because we were talking about trades and so on earlier, and we talked about Gausman. Who do you think is more likely to be traded between Gausman and Kikuchi? I mean, got to be Kikuchi, right? Like, only because he's a UFA and Gausman is not, like you validly pointed out earlier, but I don't think that necessarily means... Like, I've always felt like if a player like Juan Soto could be traded once, not once, but twice, then really anyone can be traded, right? Like, there's not anyone who, in theory, is, like, completely off the table, but you do need guys to hit for you, and you need guys to pitch for you, and I think if you, as long as you believe that Gausman has the chance of being, of turning it around, especially the way he pitched today, you think you can do a lot better, as we've seen, even this season, you're holding on to Gausman. Like, you're trading, Kikuchi is the most likely to go, which is unfortunate, because I think it'd be kind of nice to have him as a Blue Jay long-term, but if you're trying to, like, maximize resources, if you believe, like Russ said earlier, that the season is already lost, and I think we all know, even if the record can fluctuate, but giving you some hope if they, like, split another four-game series with the Astros coming up here, I think we kind of, like, know what the ceiling is of this franchise, of this team right this second. If that's the case, then you probably are best maximizing those resources and trading guys like Kikuchi, probably, which is kind of unfortunate.
In Gausman's case, even if you thought, let's go to the deadline and let's really retool this thing, maybe even take a step back in 2025, let's get as many assets as we can, which I don't think is the way they're thinking. I think they want to be competitive in 2025. But let's say you had that thought. Trading Gausman now, he's just so low in terms of his value. Like, even with that kind of cynical mindset of we need to maximize our future resources, which is not necessarily what people want to hear all the time, with Gausman, you would just wait till his stock is higher. Like, you have him for 2.5 more years now. Like, give him a chance to have a good rest of this season, and you give him a chance to have a good 2025. Like, you could get more for 1.5 years of Gausman when it seems like he's pitching as an ace than you could for trading 2.5 years of Gausman when people are worried about his performance level.
Before we go, I wanted to play a couple of clips for everyone here. And there was a brief one on something that you don't see very often. The Yankees had put out the lineup much earlier today for everyone, for you and I, for example, and they circulated here in the radio booth in the press box, and it did not have Juan Soto in it. And then 5 minutes before first pitch, Soto was in the game. And Schneider was asked about it. Let's hear what he had to say.
No, not that late. I got a text from Booney at 1:19, I believe it was. They had told us, you know, a different lineup and then changed back. But, it was pretty late. It didn't affect Kev at all. You know, we called down there as soon as we found out. Nothing really phases Kev when he's getting ready. So, that was latest we've seen so far.
I was curious about how it affected Gausman, largely because you got to think that if you know a guy is not playing, because you get the lineups like hours in advance, that you prepare slightly differently. And I mean, not only you're preparing for like an average player coming into the lineup differently, you're probably preparing for Juan Soto of all people differently as well. And Juan Soto, I think did hit a single off Gausman like in his first AB in the second batter of the game. But I mean, ultimately maybe it wouldn't have mattered because Gausman's command was a little spotty, just generally speaking today. But I admit I had not really seen that before.
It was a bit odd, but Juan Soto is a known quantity at this point, right? Like, Kevin Gausman is a veteran. He knows what to expect. When you're preparing for a team, you know, he's probably been preparing for the Yankees for a few days now in advance of his start, and so he probably didn't even think there was a possibility of Soto being out of the lineup, and that might have been a nice little relief when he first thought. But when it comes back around and Soto's back in the lineup, that's unfortunate news for Gausman and the Blue Jays, but that's the way it goes. The only time when this would cause a real disruption, I think, is a scenario where you're starting an opener, because when you're starting that reliever just to pitch one inning or two innings, you really are heavily zeroing in on those early game matchups, and that's a big part of how you select that pitcher. But when you're rolling out a Kevin Gausman, who even in a bit of a diminished form in 2024, you expect to be a strong starter, give you six innings on a good day, it doesn't really affect any of the strategy.
Speaking of Kevin Gausman, we've talked a lot about him and the five walks and the seven earned runs and, you know, just general concern for the team's ace. He did speak to the media as well. He just wrapped up his availability, and let's hear what he had to say discussing the bases loaded walk and how the game's changed.
You know, it's this game is it's changed a lot over the last couple of years. I'll say that. And so, you know, there's ways that teams are trying to find a way to beat you, and you know, you got to kind of tie every knot that you can. You know, I kind of had to switch up some things, and it worked out for me in that aspect, but you know, I obviously still gave up 7 runs today, so not great.
And you mentioned also with Mons, the game's changed a little bit over the past couple of years. What did you mean by that?
You know, it's just I mean, look at the game. We got a clock, we got the pitch, you know, the pitch communicator or whatever you want to call it, you know, disengagements, like everything. So I think because of that, teams are looking for other ways to, you know, find a tip on you or, you know, relay from wherever they can. And so you really have to be on top of your game. And yeah.
You know, I can't tell. That's Kevin Gausman talking to Schreiderviti, was asking the follow-up question in the middle there. But I don't think it sounds, Nick, like he's blaming the pitch clock or like the variety of new rules, like the disengagement rule. You can only do it 3 times in a against a single batter before you like have to get the out, for example, or the pitch calm, for example. But it did sound like he was trying to, again, excuse is a strong word, but it did kind of sound like he was trying to like express that it's not a finished product, like it's of changing or tailoring your game to like how baseball was before / after.
It was a bit of an odd quote. It's a good follow-up by Shai, because I was listening to it myself, and I was thinking, I don't think I'm exactly sure what he means by that. And so Shai asked him exactly. And his answer, to be fair, was a little bit vague, even the second time around. One thing I thought was interesting was how he said they could be relaying from anywhere, and that's edging towards an accusation. I don't know if that's exactly where he was going with it. I do find it a bit odd because, you know, we're basically playing under the same rules this year as we were last year. Mm-hmm. And last year he was extremely successful.
Like,
if it had been someone like Alek Manoah, for instance, where people thought, you know, the pitch clock may have messed with his rhythm and affected his game, that's a different situation where you're like, I'm trying to adjust to the way the game is different. Gausman has already made that adjustment. He's already shown that under the current conditions that baseball has played, he can be an ace-level starter. So I don't know where his head was at today. Obviously, a disappointing outing for him, and that might have made him kind of circumspect in a variety of ways. Yeah. And I don't know if he's really trying to be too against how the game is right now.
I just thought it was interesting because you don't often hear, and again, I'm not saying it was an excuse, but I don't think you often hear Gausman even say anything like remotely close to that. You know what I mean? Like he sometimes does say things like he had said in a couple of starts ago that, you know, like the team needs to play better. We got to pitch well or we lose. And the offense has been playing better like we were talking about. But yeah, it was an interesting quote from him because he's not a guy, and it didn't sound frustrated to me, but he's not a guy who like actively gets frustrated in my experience. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting quote. Before we go, probably worth mentioning what we might see tomorrow. Canada Day, it's the first of 4 against the Astros. And unless there's been news since we've started doing the postgame show, I'm imagining that with no days off until next Monday, which is July 8th, Yariel Rodriguez will start tomorrow. And he, of course, played, I think, what was it, an inning and a third against the Boston Red Sox. And, I mean, now that was the rainout game. That was a game that was suspended. So when that game is resumed, because it wasn't canceled, but when that game is resumed in August 26th, I'll have to see if he comes back out after a month-long delay or two-month delay. No, I'm kidding. But tomorrow he will pitch. And we saw Trevor Richards get up briefly in this game when Gausman was having trouble, I think in the second inning. He never entered this game, probably because they knew they would need him tomorrow. See, I got to think he's going to pitch tomorrow. Baden Francis, we knew, was lined up, and he did pitch the day after the rainout for a couple of outs, and he pitched 2 in a row. He hasn't pitched a ton in terms of innings or actual pitches thrown, so I got to imagine he's probably still available tomorrow as well, but it's a tough spot, mainly because like it's never great to rely on bullpen days when you're kind of struggling with the bullpen. But it's kind of tough for it to fall on Canada Day. I gotta say, it's like probably like one of the best days you can experience down here at the ballpark. There was that trade we talked about on the pregame show, Yeri Rodriguez being acquired by the Blue Jays, 26-year-old righty acquired from the Rangers for single-A prospect pitcher Josh Mallerus. So they're still continuing to kind of just throw whatever they can at the wall to see what sticks here, Nick. And we got to see Jose Quas throw a clean inning in a blowout. Not sure how much stock you put into that, but still, you know, the bullpen's going to be a big factor in what we see tomorrow.
Absolutely. As you mentioned, it's not the most glamorous Canada Day when you're talking about a guy trying to make his way as an MLB starter and figure it out in Yariel Rodriguez and, you know, give you a short outing there, and then you're turning it over to the bullpen. But, it, you know, it may well be effective. Yariel Rodriguez is a guy, I think there's a big difference is the way that he threatens right-handed hitters and left-handed hitters. Like, he does have that slider in the fastball, can work well against righties. And the Astros don't have a ton of powerful Yordan Alvarez, obviously, sure. Big exception. But it's not like, you know, a Cleveland that's going to throw a million lefties at you. So I could see him having a little bit of success in, I don't know, a 3-4 inning outing, whatever that looks like. So it's not ideal, but he might find his way out of it.
Looking forward to seeing that tomorrow. I always look forward to when you and I get to do this together, Nick. It was nice to have you back in the booth with me, and hopefully we get to do this again soon.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you guys being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown West Control Centers in North Bay and Thunder Bay. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick Ashbourne, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Michael Jose Collins, I'm Sho. That does it for us. We are out of here. Blair and Barker are on Jays Talk duty for the whole Astro series. Don't forget, they're on both TV and radio for Canada Day. So we'll fire up the back leg line tomorrow afternoon. We'll fire up the text line as well to get some of your texts on TV. Hey, happy Pride, everyone. Happy Canada Day long weekend. Despite today's result, I hope you're enjoying it wherever you are. I'm back next weekend. We'll talk to you later.